There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. This is podcast number 282, June 8th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Canadian maple syrup to Canadian whiskey, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, we thank Yahoo Ads. Well, Steve, we got Canada, and once again,
race carnage in Canada.
Race carnage, no rain as predicted. It's supposed to be 40% chance of thunderstorms on race day. We got nothing but a beautiful, sunny, warm day.
Another lovely day in Canada, a sellout crowd. Which didn't really surprise me because of the fact that with no U.S. Grand Prix, you get a lot of the Americans who would have gone to Indy and not gone to Canada, basically going over the border for the race, the one chance to get to a race in North America.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Bernie and Tony, sending our fine dollars over the border.
Exactly. Let's quickly recap qualifying from Saturday for the Grand Prix du Canada. And basically... Kind of the typical first session, some little differences here. We got Sebastian Vettel, who does not participate in qualifying due to an accident at the end of the free practice on Saturday morning. Wrecked his car, was unable to get the chassis built up in time to get back into qualifying. So he'll set no time and we'll start 20th. Actually, we'll start from pit row. And then Jenson Button basically gets a lap and has to bring it in, and he has gear problems and will not finish qualifying, and he will also start from pit lane. And then the other three out in the first session will be Sebastian Bourdais, followed by Adrian Sutil and Giancarlo Fisichella. The two Force India Ferraris pretty closely together, only about six thousandths of a second between them, so pretty evenly matched, just not quite quick enough. And then on to the second session, we've got the typical, you know, qualifying, not a lot of action, just a quick laps, people trying to get it in right at the end. Out in the second session are Nelson Piquet, Jarno Trulli, David Coulthard, Kaz Nakajima, and Timo Glock. Kaz Nakajima's been looking really strong this weekend, a little bit of a surprise. I was kind of expecting him to get into the third session. But as is the case, it seems that a lot of drivers can't carry over the pace that they have in practice into the qualifying session.
That's true. And Fernando Alonso, once again, outpacing Nelson Piquet, call me Junior when I'm in a good mood.
By almost an entire second.
Yes.
In that session.
Not sure what's going on there.
Maybe Nelson's not as talented as everybody seems to have thought. You know, I can see some of it being rookie jitters, but still... Even by this time last year, Heikki Kovalainen chasing down Giancarlo Fisichella last year in the Renault were pretty evenly matched at this point in the season. So Nelsino needs to pick it up because if nothing else, he needs to start getting himself into the final session at the very least. A little bit of fun right at the end of the session. Mark Webber on his cool down lap manages to catch some of the marbles and wreck his car and is unable to participate in Q3 and will set no time. Third session, very interesting. Several lead changes, kind of typical of what we've been seeing in the third session. We'll see a couple
exciting,
couple people bouncing back and forth. Fernando had P1 for a few minutes. Nico Rosberg had P1 for a few seconds. I think Felipe Massa never on the top of the time charts.
And Kubica was right there.
In fact, actually had P1.
And to be honest with you, I thought he was going to retain that. And, of course, Lewis Hamilton comes in with just a fantastic lap.
Managed to get a fantastic lap. And, of course, he's on the in the interview room saying that, you know, it could be bettered. But one of the things we're seeing, the track is very hot here in Canada in the qualifying session. And they had some new patches of asphalt, which are starting to come apart during the qualifying session, which was giving a lot of drivers trouble. So that's a big question mark for Sunday as to whether or not that's going to still be the case. As it turns out, for the race, it's not quite as hot. There's just a touch of overcast coming and going, which helps keep the track a little bit cooler. Not quite as much degradation as we saw in qualifying.
Yeah, and the track begins to fall apart in Turn 7 and in Turn 10. And in the interview room after qualifying, where Kimi Raikkonen, who qualified third...
We'll go over that in just a second.
And he was perturbed by this track. He thought it was a joke.
Yeah, they've got to put down that asphalt a little bit earlier in the year maybe or something so it has more time to cure. But then again, you've also got the combination of the heat. No one expects it to be pushing 90, between 90 and 100 in Canada in June. It's not typical for that far north.
I understand, but they've had this problem for years in Canada. And the biggest problem is it's a fairly narrow track, and the marbles just have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, and this track gets very narrow very quickly. Just the nature of this track. So let's look at our qualifying order. Lewis Hamilton wins pole with a 117.886. That's about 0.8 of a second off of his best lap in Q2. Followed by Robert Kubica in the BMW Sauber. Kimi Raikkonen qualifies third. Fernando Alonso fourth. Very good showing for Renault in Q3. Followed by Nico Rosberg. And then Felipe Massa, Heikki Kovalainen, Nick Heidfeld, Rubens Barrichello, who is having what appears to be a relatively phenomenal weekend, and Mark Webber qualifies 10th, setting no time in the final session. About 3 seconds between the top qualifier and the ninth position qualifier, so pretty big gap there going up to Lewis, but you got to figure that guys like Rubens and Nick Heidfeld are going to probably run quali with a pretty heavy tank to try to get a little bit deeper into the race,
exactly.
As that happens to be.
And I want to remind everybody that we did not get to watch this on Speed because Speed wouldn't dare interfere with a very important race in the NASCAR world, which happened to be in the Poconos.
But that was on TNT. So, no, actually the big thing is that it's on the mothership this weekend of their affiliate being the Fox Network.
Yeah, exactly. That's the owner of Speed. So we don't get any pre-race coverage.
And we get... Just
the lights go out.
Yeah, exactly. Like basically, they didn't even wait for the interviews to finish at the end of the race.
Right.
Before they jumped off to, in our local market, Starship Atlantis. Give me a break.
I saw that, but whatever. It was a 2-hour window. They stuck it in there the best they could. And that's what we get stuck with here in America when the race starts leaning into prime time. That's
and it's going to be interesting for us for the next 3 races because we're going back to Europe and we're going to be on Fox still. So that's going to be, and you probably didn't notice that when I said that, but the next race will be, France will be on Fox at 10 o'clock, which means we don't get to see it live.
I've just gone into a deep depression, Stephen. Are
Sorry.
You sure?
Yeah.
I thought this was the only race on Fox.
Nope. They said we'll be on here for the next 3, for basically the four race window for broadcast are this race and the next 3. So it'll be France, I think it's France, England, or Britain, and would that next one be Germany? So,
well, hopefully I can blame the Bush administration for this.
Yeah, you probably can, but we'll leave politics out of it.
Okay, let's go to the race. The lights go out, and an excellent start for Lewis Hamilton.
Very good. Keeps Robert Kubica at bay. Kubica does a good job of keeping Raikkonen at bay. But Alonso does not do a really good job of keeping Nico Rosberg at bay and manages to give up 4th position.
Exactly. Well, he was stuck inside. Nico goes on the outside and was able to sneak in. And I think Fernando did the right thing instead of bumping wheels and causing trouble.
Just staying on track so that he
exactly.
would maintain his pace and not do anything untoward. Unusually clean start. Again, I think,
Very clean start. I think
the driver's meetings are starting to help. We're not seeing the carnage in the first turn that we're typically used to. I think part of that, too, is the fact that even the rookies we have in the field this season are a little bit more seasoned drivers than we've seen in past seasons, so we're not seeing as much of that over-aggressiveness on that first turn. No, I think the teams have gotten the message across that, hey,
you get through the first lap.
Exactly. Get through that first turn because the sponsors don't like it when you wreck the car less than a minute into the race.
Exactly. So they save their knucklehead moves for later on in the program.
Some really good knucklehead moves this week. Rosberg gets Alonso. Barrichello manages to move up to 7th from 9th. Nakajima is up 2 places to 10th. And at the start, Timo Glock is the biggest loser, dropping from 11th to 14th.
Lap 2. Lewis Hamilton, fastest lap with a 118.843. And very impressive. He's taking off.
Yeah,
he seems to be comfortable in Canada.
Yeah, understandable. He won here last year. He had a really good race last year. And he's been burning up the track in quali and practice pretty much for the last 2 weeks. Weber's trying to get past Nakajima down there for about, probably around 12th.
Exactly. So, Nick Heidfeld's chasing Rubinho.
Yep. And after one lap, Hamilton's lead is already up to a second and a half over Robert Kubica.
Exactly. Lap 4, Lewis Hamilton with the fastest lap, 117.506. And on lap 5, Nick Heidfeld finally gets by Rubinho. And I think Nick was on a heavy fuel load, but not only that, but, you know, once again, Kubica out-qualifies him, and it's starting to get on his nerves.
Yeah, I am happy to see that he did get into Q3 because he had that, he basically, you know, like 17 races in a row going into Monaco that he qualified in the top 10 and did not make it into the top 10 in Monaco, so that's a good move for him. He's looking pretty good this weekend. He manages to get Barrichello in the hairpin after almost running into the back of him on the previous lap.
Also, if you listen to the Mario Tyson interview, our wonderful Nasser Hamid asked him a question about strategy, and because once last year, Nick Heidfeld and Kubica almost got together, and they never want to see that happen again, and it was interesting. His answer was, well, we've got that fixed now, and what they're doing is both drivers are on extreme different strategies.
Right.
So that keeps them apart.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of times people are blaming Nick Heidfeld for not out-qualifying Robert Kubica. I hate to say this right now, but BMW has a number one and a number two driver. And right now, Nick Heidfeld seems to be getting the heavier fuel load and will be further behind the pack.
Kind of the second choice strategy set.
Exactly. Lap 6, Rubinho is holding up the pack, and there's a bit of a train right behind him. But he still has a relatively good race, and I'm very impressed. By lap 8, Lewis Hamilton has got a 4-second lead. He's doing an outstanding job. And like we know, Fernando Alonso lost one spot at the start, but he's holding his own in P5, while Piquet is in the back at P15.
Yes, he does manage on lap 10 to get past Timo Glock for P14.
On lap 9, when Nelson Piquet passes Timo Glock, I heard deep in the back of my mind a little bit of a bravo, 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 Nelsino.
Maybe it was just one bravo.
Yeah, it could have been just, I'll give him a bravo and a half. But it was pretty impressive for a few more laps there, Nelsino was doing a good job attacking the Toyotas.
Yeah, he was actually getting up on Trulli and keeping him close too. So just couldn't, you know, Trulli being the veteran that he is, he's tough to get past. But lap 13 does a really good job of just bumping Trulli out of the way to get around him in the hairpin.
Exactly, and there were more bravos dished out by Flavio.
Yeah, he was looking really good at this point. Heidfeld's all over the back of Kovalainen, trying to get into P7.
Exactly.
And it's already, the corner down in turn 10 in the hairpin is just starting to get really nasty. You get a little bit offline, come out of that corner, and you can just see the back ends just getting all over the place because there's no traction because of the marbles.
Lap 14, Kimi Raikkonen with a fast lap, a 117.387, which will turn out to be the last and final fast lap of this emotionally filled race. Lap 15, Sutil is out.
Has a little. It's hard. I don't know what happened. I think he may have just had a failure. I think he may. You know,
he had a failure, but he couldn't get the car completely off of the road. It was
He was basically up against the wall, but it was one of those spots
I think he could have pulled it over a little bit more, but he didn't.
Well, the other problem they had, too, is that he was nowhere near any of the gates.
Well, the safety car still came out,
Stephen. So, yeah, well, that's what I mean, is that he wasn't close enough that they could get it off the track safely without putting out the safety car.
And Jensen Button's the first one to pit, even though I thought the pits were closed.
He didn't take fuel.
He didn't take fuel?
You can pit under the red or under the yellow when the pits are closed. For mechanical, you can't take fuel. So what he did is he went and he changed to the option tire. He went around a lap and went back in and changed his tires. He went around until the pits reopened. He went back in, went back to the hard tires, and got his gas.
And that's the second time around when Jensen Button came back in for fuel. That's when everybody else began to pit.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a lot of
you
pitting.
Talk about. I don't think. I'm like, wow, flashbacks to a NASCAR race, the way they were coming in on this car.
Yeah, they were pitting like wildfire.
Well, everybody, the first five or six cars in the race are in.
Exactly. And good, clean pit stops for everybody. But as people were coming out, Kimi Raikkonen, Lewis Hamilton,
Raikkonen and Kubica managed to get out of their pit stalls before Lewis Hamilton and get down to the end of the pit lane.
But my question is, if the pits are open, why was the pit light red?
I'm not sure why that red light was still on at the end of the pit if the pits were open.
I think that will be investigated because that was a problem right there. Of course, Kimi and Lewis.
Well, Kimi and Robert see the red light and
they stop. But your friend and Nasser's
protege.
Exactly. Does not see the light.
No.
And Lewis, I don't know what he was doing, but I know they're going to blame a button on the steering wheel. He must have pushed the wrong button.
Yeah. Well, I think what it was, he didn't press the right pedal.
Yeah. And I think he was goofing around, not looking ahead to see the light, and two cars stopped.
There's always possibility that he was looking to make some adjustment on the steering column. But the gist of the story is, at the end of pit lane, Lewis Hamilton runs up the back of Kimi Raikkonen, taking both of them out of the race. Good job by Lewis to turn to hit Kimi, because that means Robert gets away scot-free.
Scot-free, and not only that, but Adrian Sutil says, "Ha!
Yeah,
that's what you get, Kimi. That's karma."
Yeah, exactly. And it would have... too bad that Lewis didn't see this, because we would have had a race.
Well, I think Lewis would have... I mean, depending on what else could have happened if that didn't happen, but the safety cars definitely played a bigger role than the degradation of the track itself.
Yeah, and actually the degradation of the track really doesn't play as big a role as one might have expected with the way this race could have turned out. There was a bit of slipping and sliding, but I don't really think anybody really bought it because of the track.
No, and they knew where to stay calm, cool, and collected in turn 10 and turn 7. Nico Rosberg pits on the following lap, lap 20, for a new nose.
And the other thing that happens, too, during this pit stop is Massa stops. He's right behind Raikkonen, and he's in.
Fuel low problem.
But they didn't get as much gas into the car as they had wanted. They brought him back, which doesn't really make sense to me. I think I would have let him run that tank out and then brought him back instead of bringing him in and sacrificing additional track position, because you can almost guarantee, not with absolute certainty, but in Canada, the odds of getting another safety car before the end of the race are pretty good.
Absolutely. Not only that, but Ferrari's just not as smooth as they used to be in the pits.
And strategy-wise.
They've lost their certain, what I call, Ross Braun je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, definitely not nearly as strong. If they're having to send out camera crews to videotape the BMW pit crew during their stops, that does not bode well for the overall quality of the team.
No, but at least they're filming the correct team, because BMW has an outstanding pit crew. Their practice and preparation has paid off.
They were very sharp today.
So lap 21, Massa pits again to get more fuel, which, like you said, was a strange call. I think they should have let him go out there for a few laps and at least build up kind of a lead.
Or build up, you know, basically get ahead of some of the slower traffic that was in front of him. There must have been some reason that they did that, but I really didn't see it.
But by lap 24, I'm telling you, after all the carnage in the pits, the safety car, we've got a very strange race. We've got Nick Heidfeld leading behind him, Rubens Barrichello, Kaz Nakajima, Mark Webber, David Coulthard, and Yarno Trulli. It was absolutely bewildering.
Heidfeld, you might understand, but Barrichello in second?
Well, Heidfeld didn't need to pit. No. Robert Kubica pitted, so Heidfeld took the lead and did an outstanding job.
Yep, he actually does even better, too, when he does finally come in for a stop.
Exactly, exactly. It was a very good stop, and it's his only one stop. And that's how, that was the right thing to do.
Right, and then also, you're talking about this, the top nine runners in the race at this point have yet to pit.
That's the key.
So, it just doesn't make any sense. And then, Massa's second stop was just kind of bewildering as to why... You even if you did come up short on the fuel delivery, unless you didn't put any gas in the car.
And I suspect that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that for some reason they used the same nozzle and basically there was nothing. Because they're programmed for each driver. And if for some reason they didn't grab Moss's rig and basically went right back, they could have... actually, that's probably a good point. That is probably what happened is that... They didn't fuel him, or what they gave him was next to nothing.
Exactly. Lap 28, Nick Heidfeld pits. Good pit stop, 12.4 seconds. He is fueled to the finish of the race.
And he's heavy. He's heavy, and he manages to get out in front of his teammates. Yes. So he still has that lead.
Which will be rectified quickly. Mark Webber pits. Lap 30, Giancarlo Fisichella pits. And sure enough, as Giancarlo Fisichella is pitting, Robert Kubica passes Nick Heidfeld, which was not that... big of a deal because Nick Heidfeld was heavy on fuel.
Yeah, Nick knew he was heavy, and he knew, and I'm sure that they're, you know, they've had the conversation that, hey, you know, if it's me in your mirrors, don't be stupid.
And now the biggest moment in years is lap 31. Rubens Barrichello is leading the race, the first time that he's led a race since the United States Grand Prix in 2005.
Wasn't that the infamous
Michelin debacle? Exactly. Lap 32,
which he should have won, but he had to pull over for his teammate
for number one. Lap 32, Nelson Piquet spins, but gets back on the track with looks like no damage.
Yeah, it looks like he managed to save it before he actually got it up against the wall. Very good job. And then the way he got out of that was pretty tricky. He backs out of the way just before Felipe Massa comes around the corner,
and that was close. But I was impressed. Lap 33, Kaz Nakajima pits, and on 34, Felipe Massa passes Mark Webber cleanly. Lap 35, Nico pits, and Giancarlo Fisichella and his Force India Ferrari-powered F1 car just touches. I mean, literally just
taking the paint off the side of the tires.
He was taking the letters off of those tires, and I was surprised that he was pushing.
Yeah, and he's trying to get as much out of this car as he can. He probably maybe caught just the fringe of the marbles coming through that corner. And that's enough to give you a little bit of boost into the walls.
Lap 36, Rubens Barrichello pits. He pits from the lead. And I stuck my ear out the window and I could hear the roar coming out of Tricky Dick's house as David Coulthard is now leading the Grand Prix of Canada. But DC pits right afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Pits from in the next lap. Massa's trying to get past Nakajima in 11th, and Nakajima's giving him a little work.
Nakajima's doing a good drive this season. I think he's doing an outstanding job. And we've got a lot of people exchanging leading this race. Yarno Trulli leads on lap 37, and then he pits on the following lap. And unfortunately... on lap 40, Nelson Piquet pits, and apparently he's got some kind of gearbox problem, and he is out of the race.
Yeah, I got to wonder if maybe he dinged something up in that spin that he had a couple of laps earlier, did something to the car that broke something loose that just, you know, came free once he started racing again.
But he did not wreck the car this time.
No, he didn't. So, change of pace.
So I think...
That'll buy him another week.
That'll buy him a couple more weeks, Steven. Timo Glock pits on lap 42, Sebastian Bourdais pits, who's not having a very good race. And while all this is going on...
your friend, Fernando is back there pestering poor Nick Heidfeld.
And they get on the radio with Nick Heidfeld and say, the strangest thing, if he's slowing you down, let him pass.
Yeah, and I think the announcers kind of put that into perspective.
They did.
If he's too busy watching him... then maybe it...
Not only that, but Nick Heidfeld is on for the rest of the race. He doesn't have to pit. Fernando does have to pit.
Exactly.
Nick Heidfeld should have thought of that and let him go by. And then you don't have this annoying Latino guy behind you.
Yeah, you don't have this bright...
I mean, he could possibly take you out by accident.
Yeah.
You know, on a dirty pass or something.
Or catch you on the hairpin, you know.
So that was
basically due to him what he did to him in Monaco.
Exactly.
Where he spears him.
Exactly. So I thought that was an interesting call from the BMW pits and an intelligent one at that.
But... And then lap 46, Fisichella pits. And right after that, in fact, right after we mentioned the fact that he's pestering Heidfeld, all of a sudden, Fernando has a spin.
Yeah, he spins it, the rear end. He loses the rear end, loses it, was able to keep it running and get it off the track.
Yeah, but it looked like he probably broke something in the front suspension because he slid off into the wall.
Yeah, I think it was a gearbox problem and the differential locked on him.
That was pretty much the exact same spot where David Webber had his accident in qualifying.
David Webber?
Or Mark Webber had his, those Red Bulls, they get confused.
I understand.
But about the same spot that Mark Webber had his accident in qualifying. So, question mark, but I think you're probably right, Clark, because it was kind of a funny way he lost it. It just kind of wasn't like he got into the marbles. Something went out on him.
Yeah, I think it was definitely some kind of structural problem. And after this, lap 47, we see Kaz Nakajima heading for the pits. Oh. And once again, we've got, I don't know what's going on in the pit lane today, but he had actually hit the back of Jenson Button's rear.
Was carrying his wing.
He's carrying a broken wing, hence the reason why he was going into the pits. But just as he was going into the pits, the wing tucked under the wheels, he lost control of the car and crashes at pit entrance.
Yeah, just a tough break because you're carrying that broken wing. And as he slows down, it finally lets go, gets up under the car,
and
no control. Boom, right into the wall.
And Kaz Nakajima, you know, unfortunately looked a little foolish, but it certainly wasn't his fault.
No, just tough.
Exactly.
It's almost like you want to, as soon as you get into the pit entrance, hit the brakes hard to throw that thing off the front of the car or something.
And now, Robert Kubica is showing his skill. He's showing that the BMW has pace, and he is a professional.
Yes, he's managed to stretch his lead out quite a bit. I think he was up to 24 seconds.
24 seconds, and he had to do this to leapfrog Nick Heidfeld, who didn't have to pit anymore.
Exactly.
And that's where it was Schumacher-esque.
Yeah, definitely. Well, or Fernando a couple years ago.
Sure.
You could see where he was getting the time between him and the guy behind him that he had to have to basically get the lead in the pit stop or keep his lead in that pit stop.
Not only that, but what's impressive is his will to fight. He could have settled for second place and given the win to Nick Heidfeld, but he said, no way, Jose. And I don't know how to say that in Polish, but if I could, I would. And he fought, got the 24-second lead, pitted, and came out in the lead. He kept the lead. That was about as machismo as you could possibly get in this Canadian Grand Prix.
And give credit to BMW's pit crew. 7.5-second stop.
BMW's pit crew, I don't know what they're on, whether they're taking steroids. I think they should all be tested. Because something is funky over at BMW. Yeah. They are so professional that it's outstanding.
And he comes out pretty clean. I think Nick is just past start finish as Robert Kubica crosses the pit exit easily back on the track ahead of his teammate. And so looking good for Robert Kubica.
My favorite pass of the day is now Mr. Felipe Massa.
Oh, this is
the
sweet.
Massa fanship on the forum will be just absolutely ecstatic because as Heikki Kovalainen is dicing it with Jenson Button.
Actually, it was with Rubens.
Oh, I'm sorry. With Rubinho.
At the hairpin.
Two-legged one.
Yes.
They lose it a little bit and Felipe Massa hits the grass a little bit with his front wheel.
Get that tire right on the top of the curb.
And he's got the pace.
Beats him around the corner.
He's got the traction, and he's out of there, and he passes two cars in one corner. Keep up the good work, Felipe. We're all very, very proud of the Cupid doll.
Yeah, very aggressive move, but very well thought. Basically taking an opportunity and making the best of it.
Exactly. Lap 53, Giancarlo Fisichella spins and he is out.
Yeah, this time he catches the barriers and
hits the barrier. He spins, loses the rear end. The rear end hits the wall, not very hard, and I almost thought he could limp it back, but he couldn't.
No. And these Formula One cars sometimes, if you get them into the barrier and it's not a square hit, your suspension components are toast.
Exactly. And lap 53, we also see the pits active with Felipe Massa, 6.2-second stop, Mark Webber, Jenson Button, and Heikki Kovalainen. On lap 54, leading the race is Robert Kubica, Nick Heidfeld in second, David Coulthard in third, Rubens Barrichello in fourth, and yeah. Timo Glock in fifth. That's the top five. Who would have guessed it?
This crazy.
The bookies were crazy.
Yeah, well, this is classic Canada, where things just, you're kind of like watching the finish order, you're going, huh? What? Wait a minute. Are these guys still in the series?
It's unbelievable, but it was impressive and exciting. Lap 60, Nico Rosberg trying to pass Sebastian Vettel, and Heikki Kovalainen is back there too, trying to get past Nico. And it's some pretty good dicing up there.
And poor Nico, basically, he tries to make the move on Sebastian Vettel and loses a little pace. And Heike's right there and just snatches the spot away from him. He ends up, instead of gaining the spot he was trying to get, he ends up losing his spot.
Exactly. That, but, you know, at least they're trying.
Yeah. And
I like there was good passing in this race.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those things, too, about this particular race, especially when this track gets to the point that it's at now, is that if you don't get that line on your pass, you're going to pay because you're going to get out into the marbles or the gravel and just basically lose that momentum that you had going into the pass.
And Felipe Massa, struggling to get into the points, is doing a fantastic job. He gets by Rubinho, and he's just gunning away, even though Ferrari sort of screwed up with the pits. They sort of screwed up with the strategy. But I have to admit, Felipe Massa is not letting this track degradation get to him as it did get to Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, and he's fighting. Well, poor Kimi didn't really have much choice. But Felipe basically makes the pass on Barrichello, and now he has Yarno truly in his sights. Can he catch him?
Exactly. And Heikki Kovalainen is trying to save what one point McLaren might be able to get out of this race. He's in P9. He's got to get to this eighth spot.
He does. If you know, he really got to try hard to get that point for
but
McLaren.
But the problem is Sebastian Vettel says no.
No. Sebastian's got a good car this weekend, and he's showing his mettle in that he is a good quality driver and can keep a slightly faster car off of off its pace.
Yeah, and I think Vettel had a good race once again when things come together.
When the car finishes for
exactly,
him.
Exactly. Felipe Massa passes Yarno Trulli in the last stages to get another point on lap 67. And of course,
and actually, this was a very interesting pass from Massa because it was very similar to the previous one because Timo manages to screw Yarno up.
Yeah, and he sort of blocks Yarno with an early break. Yeah. Yarno has to slow down, and Massa almost got by both of them.
Yeah, and that basically, again, Massa taking advantage of somebody else's mistake. He's in the right spot to take the opportunity, and he capitalizes.
And, of course, the host of F1Weekly.com predicted, went out on a limb and said this could be BMW's first win. And what happens? The host is correcto. Will be
not only is it their first win, their first double podium, first one to finish.
First Polish win. First time we heard the Polish national anthem.
Yep.
So I'm there. I'm telling you, I was excited, and I'm going to be writing myself a little bonus check.
Give yourself a couple zeros.
Yeah, you betcha. So Robert Kubica wins the Canadian Grand Prix, and Nick Heidfeld right behind him, a proud papa, but once again, the teammate is beating him. And once again, as tears, and David Coulthard is running
as we're trying to get David Coulthard off to pasture, he manages to sneak in and get himself a podium finish.
Does that mean he's going to linger on for another year?
I think it's going to basically give him a much better opportunity to finish the season.
It's true, but also everybody can see that safety cars.
Well, it's Canada. In Canada, you kind of.
It's oh Canada, Stephen.
Yeah, it is oh Canada because anything can happen here, and it seems to happen.
And sure enough, Timo Glock keeps Felipe Massa at bay and finishes in fourth. Felipe Massa fifth. Yarno Trulli sixth. And Rubens Barrichello gets seven. Sebastian Vettel gets that last point. Keep up the good work. Then Heikki Kovalainen, Nico Rosberg, Jenson Button, Mark Webber, and Sebastian rounds off the 13 drivers that finished this race.
We end up with Fisichella, Nakajima, Alonso, Piquet, Raikkonen, Hamilton, and Sutil out. The interesting thing about this is it now means that Ferrari leads the Constructors' Championship with 73 points, just 3 points ahead of the BMW Sauber team with 70, and McLaren falls back to 53.
McLaren got no points. Nothing. You know what that means?
That means that they're going to have a heck of a time trying to win the championship.
Not only that, but BMW... those people are going to start working so hard because now they've tasted it.
Yeah, exactly.
And once you've tasted that certain...
well, once you've had a good sip of the champagne, when you get two bottles...
yeah, you don't go back.
Exactly.
Exactly. We know this happened to China with capitalism, and it's going to happen to BMW with Formula One racing. So I'm very happy for Robert Kubica. And once again... every time F1 Weekly interviews somebody, they win.
Yep.
We interviewed Mario Tyson. Boom. Double podium.
And also, what this race does for Kubica is it puts him into the lead in the Drivers' Championship with 42 points, ahead of Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa, both with 38. Kimi Raikkonen is fourth with 35. And Nick Heidfeld is fifth with 28. The one thing about BMW this season, consistent. They've been solid in every race. They've finished just about every race. And they've pointed in just about, they've pointed in every race. And most of the times they've brought home both cars in the points.
And what they're becoming is the ultimate Formula One machine. Thank you very much. And don't forget, we interviewed Bruno Senna. What happens? He wins. Ladies and gentlemen, we are becoming a factor in the world championship.
We are a talisman.
I'm telling you.
Everybody's going to want interviews with us.
Exactly. They're going to be calling us. So I'm pretty happy about that. Canadian Grand Prix is now behind us. We go to France, Manicourt, where we have good fromage, un bon petit vin rouge, et des belles filles.
Belles filles.
So I'm pretty excited.
And Bernie Ecclestone is completely unhappy because he has to take a helicopter to the track.
Well, that's the problem. You know, Nasser hit it right on the head. These people want the hotel right next to the track, the airport right next to the track, and the lavatory right there next to them. They don't want to have to move around and might get a whiff of cow dung.
I don't even think it's so much that. It's like they think that their time is so valuable that, you know, they can't take a little time to travel out to a track. I'm sure that's the reason why Bernie's so hard on Silverstone is that it's not right next to the hotel and right next to the airport. That's why he wants the races in the cities of, say, London and Paris, is because then he's going to have this hotel right there, and then the airport is reasonably close. And I think it's almost more the fact that the hotel isn't right there at the track, and he can't just kind of walk out of the hotel, hop in a golf cart, and be in his box in, you know, less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, so there you have it. Keep up the good work, Stephen. This ends this charming little podcast for today. I want to thank everybody who brings this possible to me and to everyone. Steve, David Tapia, Nasser, Desiree, and Toby. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.